Production support for Earth Eats comes from Elizabeth Rue, enrolled agent with Personal Financial Services, assisting businesses and individuals with tax preparation and planning for over 15 years. More at personalfinancialservices.net. And The Clean Bedroom, offering organic mattresses, adjustable beds, and pillows, helping mindful customers create a sustainable and organic clean bedroom step by step. New York City, Boston, and now Indianapolis. More at thecleanbedroom.com. From WFIU, I'm Kate Young, and this is Earth Eats.
Oh, savory tubular fruit blooming in the hollow of a hot pot of golden vegetable oil. Where does your labor end?
Today we have a show full of festive foods. We've got decorated sugar cookies in Texas, an almond-studded Palestinian cake, and a special, maybe, Sierra Leonean spring roll. Harvest Public Media has a story about CRISPR technology and its potential role in feeding a projected population of 9 billion people in the not-so-distant future. Stay tuned for these stories coming up in the next half hour on Earth Eats. Hey, Alex.
Yeah?
You're back?
Yeah.
Okay, great. What's in the news?
We spend a lot of time here on Earth Eats talking about food in the U.S., which makes sense since that's where most of our listeners are. But considering the trade war, not to mention it's one of the biggest economies in the world, I thought we should check in this week on China. Here's a bit of what's going on. Last August, China announced a plan to establish hundreds of industrialized farm towns to help wean the country off imported crops. The plan came in the heat of trade skirmishes with the U.S. This past week, China announced a new effort to start subsidizing farm equipment. Officials called on banks to finance efforts to mechanize farming and consolidate land for crops such as rice, wheat, corn, potato, rapeseed, cotton, and sugarcane. According to government figures, China employs 280 million people on farms, which is 100 times more than the U.S. Chinese farms are much smaller, with an average of less than 2 acres per farm, compared to the average of 400 acres in the U.S. Yields are also much smaller by comparison, with the yield for soybeans per acre less than half that of the U.S., according to the United Nations. In September, the country's cabinet announced a 5-year plan to improve farm productivity, with $6 billion in loans and grants coming from the Asia Development Bank to modernize agriculture. But analysts say mechanizing rural farms too fast could destabilize the economy with millions of job losses, which explains why the country has moved slowly on modernization so far. Chinese law enforcement is getting into food safety. The country's Ministry of Agriculture and Rural Affairs announced this week that law enforcement agencies will start to crack down on counterfeit and substandard food in rural areas. The new efforts will target instant food, snacks, alcohol, condiments, and meat and dairy, consumption of which is high in rural areas. The campaign comes in the midst of heightened concern about food safety in China. The most publicized incident came in 2008, when melamine was added to milk to mask its low quality. Thousands of children got sick. Earlier this year, the Ministry of Education called for better food safety in schools. Food safety regulation is much more effective in urban parts of the country. According to one report, over 80% of food safety incidents and 90% of foodborne diseases originate in rural areas. Consumers are especially concerned about pesticide residues on fruits and vegetables, adulterated food, and sanitary conditions of kitchens. The chief of agricultural product quality at the Ministry of Agriculture and Rural Affairs said the vast majority of agricultural products met national standards, but there are still instances of farmers using banned pesticides and antibiotics. The Minister of Agriculture and Rural Affairs said they will leave no stone unturned as they look for illegal factories and workshops, and producers who break the law may be transferred to the police. And that's the news. Those stories came from Chad Bouchard and me, Alex Chambers.
Thanks, Alex.
Sure thing, Kate.
A new technology called CRISPR allows scientists to turn off certain genes in a plant or animal. Its applications range from human medicine to plant breeding, but it's already mired in controversy. Harvest Public Media's Amy Mayer got a hands-on look at CRISPR.
In a lab at George Washington University, Arnaud Martin welcomes visitors with a video that shows a variety of butterflies with different colors and patterns on their wings. The CRISPR technology has helped Martin and his group identify a gene that affects wing appearance.
So what we do with CRISPR is nothing fancy. We don't do genome editing or, you know, detailed surgery. We just break genes.
That break switches off a precise gene function in a butterfly egg, ultimately changing how the wings look. The work is helping Martin's research group explore questions about evolution and development. On this day, they're letting a bunch of science writers try CRISPR. First, we get a small dish with a bunch of butterfly eggs. They're not microscopic. With a naked eye, you can see the tiny bluish dots. A close-up view through a microscope reveals they are, in fact, egg-shaped. We're instructed to nudge them gently with a glass rod until they stand on one end.
I have destroyed more eggs in interesting ways.
See, I did pretty well.
Yeah, you did.
When I finally get a few eggs in the right position, I take the dish to a different scope. This one is connected to an electric needle full of a reddish fluid. It contains Cas9, the protein tool that is the heart of CRISPR, and something called guide RNA. Grad student Vincent Figuerata explains what they do.
The guide RNA is the specific directional vector that will, you know, direct the Cas9 to the specific site in the DNA to cut there.
Figuerata says the DNA repairs itself around the cut, and then the egg continues otherwise normal development. There's no loud outcry against this CRISPR work with butterflies, but in November, a Chinese scientist announced he'd used CRISPR to alter DNA in human embryos. His goal? To protect a set of twins from AIDS. Colleagues decried his disregard for the peer review process and questioned the truth of his claim, but scientists and ethicists were left fearing the pending arrival of designer babies, genetically altered in utero to suit their parents' desire. No such high stakes for me here, but the same concept is at play. I struggle a bit getting the egg positioned.
My needle is not really in the same plane as my egg.
Research assistant Chris Day comes to my assistance.
We're now at the needle touching the genes.
I tap the foot pedal and watch through the microscope as red goo oozes into the tiny egg. Martin uses this lab exercise in a class that also spends time discussing bioethics and appropriate uses for the technology.
What I'm telling the students is always to think about several levels of consequences.
Such as how a change will affect future generations of a species. If used responsibly, Martin says CRISPR could help solve many challenges, including in agriculture.
But if you want to feed the planet 9 billion people, I think we will benefit from accelerated domestication, from engineering crops so they are less demanding in terms of resource, they're less vulnerable to pests, so less waste, better use of land, and so on.
CRISPR's use in plant breeding is a bit less controversial, as seeds can be made sterile, so genetic changes don't persist into offspring. Agriculture companies already have their eyes on it. Bayer Crop Science President Liam Condon was in Des Moines this fall.
It's a development that we're very excited about.
He says this time companies want the public to understand upfront the value of a new technology.
One of the issues that we've always had with GMO technology is that the benefits are very clear for the grower, for the farmer, but they're not so clear for the consumer.
He's confident CRISPR's potential to remove food allergens or boost nutritional quality will appeal broadly. What worries him more is how different governments will approach regulating the technology.
It is important that there's kind of a consistent regulatory framework to ensure international trade with whatever is developed using CRISPR-Cas9.
GMOs taught the industry that important lesson after different approval timelines held up overseas deliveries of some U.S. crops. Amy Mayer, Harvest Public Media.
Find more from this reporter collective at harvestpublicmedia.org. Time of year, some of us pull out our favorite cookie recipes and show off our baking skills with homemade gifts for family and friends. But would you ever consider going professional? We've got an ongoing series here on Earth Eats called Making the Leap, where we talk to people who take their great food ideas to the next level. Today we're speaking with Jamie Dansby, the owner of Fresh Batch Cookies in Wichita Falls, Texas, about what pushed her to start her baking business.
It started off as a hobby, baking for friends and family, and they encouraged me to open a bakery, and I questioned every time, and then finally bit the bullet and have had pretty good reception ever since. The whole company started with the chocolate chip cookie. That's what's made me famous. From there, I've had customers request different flavors. I also offer sprinkle cookies, snickerdoodles, a brookie, which is a brownie cookie, also white chocolate macadamia nut, and then the popular decorated sugar cookie with the different themes or logos. It just goes based off what customers are asking for.
I've seen that you've done some princess fairy tale themes. Oh, the one I really loved was the Wizard of Oz.
Yes, that was for a play that they were doing in town, and the customer had nieces and nephews who were munchkins, and she's like, I just need something Wizard of Oz, just a couple cookies for each of them. So just did a little research. I had Oz, and then I had the ruby slipper, and then a yellow brick road.
They were so original, the designs. I'd never seen anything like it, and I can really see the appeal for customers to get that kind of custom attention. You're not just grabbing some design that's out there. You're coming up with it yourself. And it's just a few cookies. And you're making a special little rainbow one. The ruby slipper was beautiful.
Well, thank you. I liked that one because it was sparkly and glittery and it made a big mess everywhere. But the cookie turned out great. So that was one of my favorites.
Jamie delivers all of the custom orders and sells prepackaged cookies at a local shop called The Loft. She relies on her Facebook page and word of mouth for marketing her cookies.
It takes one person posting a picture or a review, and then several other people are led to my page and then order from there.
Jamie started the company as a side gig in February of 2017. Within 3 months, she had more orders than she could keep up with and still hold down her day job.
Started having more and more late nights as far as working on the cookies and having everything done as promised to the customer, to the point where I could not maintain my normal 40-hour job and do the cookies. So if I had to choose, it was not going to be the 40-hour job. I'd rather just do the cookies full time. So take that leap and go with it.
Any regrets? No looking back?
None whatsoever. I would much rather do what I want to be doing, working for myself, than working for someone else.
So have you always been someone who thought, someday I'm going to have my own business?
Absolutely not. I have had no intentions of owning my own business. I have a business degree, but it's in human resources, so I always imagined that I would be working for someone else.
So you've never been one of these people who've just kind of always dreamed of being your own boss?
No. But I love it.
What has surprised you about it?
I like being able to decide how much time I can spend. If I want to be really, really busy, I can do that. If I want to maybe slow it down a little bit and take a day off here and there, I can also do that. So that is the best for me. If I have things outside of the business that I want to do, as far as kids' events or we want to take a vacation, I can do that and schedule accordingly.
Texas has what are known as cottage food laws that allow Jamie to bake from her own kitchen, following specific guidelines and restrictions. She's got two young children at home, though, so it wasn't always ideal for her to have every surface of her home kitchen covered with trays of cookies.
They usually say, "Ooh, are those for us?" And the answer is usually, "No."
1 year after launching the business, Jamie moved into her own commercial kitchen, dedicated to cookie production.
It's more work than I was doing at the 40-hour-a-week job, but it's also more rewarding. I mean, this is what I want to be doing. I want to be baking, and I want to be delivering to my customers. I didn't anticipate growing so quickly. It's been a learning process and lots of planning as I go. It's hard to plan and make cookies and do everything that is involved in the business as far as ordering supplies and getting everything in on time that I need it. And also bake and decorate at the same time. Answer questions, check my schedule. It's crazy, but no complaining.
What's your most popular cookie? What's the thing that's ordered the most?
Chocolate chip. By the dozens, usually. That's what started the whole deal. So we'll just go with that as long as we can.
Thanks so much for talking with us, Jamie.
No problem. Thank y'all.
Fresh Batch is in full swing for the holidays with new flavors like mint chocolate chip, hot cocoa, and I think I saw some sandwich cookies on the Facebook page. We've got photos of some of Jamie's original decorated cookie designs on our website, eartheats.org. Production support comes from Charles Schwab & Company, Incorporated, whose local branch is now located at 1155 College Mall Road. Independent branch leader Jeremy Zeichner, CFP, and team offer personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at schwab.com/Bloomington. Need more coffee roasters? A woman-owned coffee bar and roastery dedicated to roasting organic, direct trade, and fair trade coffee from small-scale farmers around the world, offering signature drinks, teas, and little eats. Located on Pete Ellis Drive, needmoreroasters.com. And Elizabeth Rue, enrolled agent with Personal Financial Services, assisting businesses and individuals with tax preparation and planning for over 15 years. More at personalfinancialservices.net. Coming up next, we have a celebratory cake found all over the Middle East. In Lebanon, you'll hear it called namoura. In Syria, harissi or basbousa. Egyptians and Palestinians call it harissa, with slightly different spellings and probably pronunciations. It's a simple yet elegant cake made with semolina. Sometimes it's made using yogurt. Some recipes call for coconut. Typically, there's no eggs, so it's easy to make a vegan version. Let's hear how Chef Daniel Orr makes his.
Starts with a cake, and then it's finished with a orange flour syrup on top of it. And we're going to serve ours with some pomegranates and a little bit of yogurt today. All right, so we have the toasted semolina. Now, semolina is a coarse ground wheat. Okay, and this is toasted, so you can see it's got kind of some brown and different colored grains to it. To that, we're going to add our sugar, and we have about 3/4 cups. Again, as always, we have our recipes posted online at eartheats.org. We're also going to use some coconut flour, and this you can find at a lot of health food stores. It's a way just to cut down a little bit on the wheat, and it's made from when they extract the coconut milk and the fats from the coconut. What's left is a product that's coconut flour. And you can use that for baking if you want to do gluten-free. It adds a little more fat, a little more texture to anything that you're baking. We're going to add some melted butter. We got 3/4 cups. And we're gonna add some yogurt. This is a whole fat yogurt. We're adding 1 full cup of that. To that, we're gonna add some baking powder. We have 1.5 teaspoons. And we're going to mix that with our hands. We just want that all to come together. The baking powder is going to give it a little bit of leavener, so it will lighten it up a little bit. But you can see it's very simple. There are no eggs in this cake, and you just want to really make sure that everything's incorporated. I'm also going to add a pinch of salt and a little pinch of pepper. Okay, I like to put a little salt and pepper in all of my desserts, even my ice creams, because what it does, even if you can't taste it, it opens up a different part of your tongue so you can taste other flavors. Okay, so you can see that that's a nice mix. I'm going to take a baking pan, and instead of, you know, traditionally in America we would use, we would butter a pan, but I'm going to use tahini. And tahini is a sesame seed paste. So it's interesting how different parts of the world use different ingredients to do the same thing. But this is also going to give us a little different flavor too. We're going to want to make sure that goes up the pan, side of the pan a bit. Pour in that semolina mix. And we're going to pat it down to a uniform thickness, probably of about half an inch. And you want to have it very consistent, so I'm going to tap it. That's going to make it flatten out. And then I'm going to cut it into diamonds.
Are you cutting all the way through there or just scoring?
Just kind of scoring it. And then when I take it out of the oven, I'll cut it the rest of the way through. But what I want to do is to make places to put my almonds. So then I take an almond and I pat an almond down in each one of those little diamonds. You could also, if you wanted to, instead of using coconut flour, you could use almond flour or ground almonds. That would be a nice change. And you could also, if you want to do gluten-free, you could replace the semolina with cornmeal, some coarse cornmeal. So this probably takes the longest of any part of this dish, is putting these almonds on all these dang little squares. But it really looks nice. So we're going to put this in the oven for about 30 to 45 minutes. It's going to be a 350 degree oven. If it starts to brown too much, we're going to turn it down a little bit to 300 and finish it, make sure that it's cooked all the way through. What we're going to do is, once that comes out while it's still warm, we're going to pour a nice orange flower syrup over it. You could also use rose water if you wanted to do a rose syrup. Both are very, very nice. Both are very traditional throughout the whole region and even all the way up into Persia. So what we're going to do is we're going to pour the water in the saucepan. We're going to add about 2.5 cups of sugar. We're going to add the orange flower water. We're also going to add some lemon zest. Lemon juice. Okay, bring that to a boil and then set aside and let it come down to room temperature. Bring it out. We're going to pour that syrup on top of it and let it soak in. Now we've taken a knife and we've run through those lines that we drew on there, made sure that they went all the way through to the bottom of the pan. Now we're going to take out one of those nice squares and serve it with a little bit of yogurt on top and some pomegranate. And there's our Palestinian semolina cake.
As you can tell, this recipe can handle a lot of adaptations. Make it gluten-free by using cornmeal. Make it vegan by replacing the dairy yogurt with a plant-based yogurt. For the syrup, you can go floral or citrus. However, I strongly recommend sticking with the pomegranate garnish, especially this time of year when they're easy to find. You'll appreciate their tanginess and that pop of color on the plate. For a photo and the recipe, go to eartheats.org. You know you can find us on Twitter, right? We are at Earth Eats, and we'd love to have you join the conversations on food news, food justice, and always interesting recipes. That's at Earth Eats. Poet Yaeli Kamara grew up eating lumpia, an egg roll type snack served at events with her family, recent immigrants from Sierra Leone. Here she is reading her poem for lumpia, called Ode.
Ode to lumpia. Your name itself sounds like a word of praise. Three syllables carving the mouth into the shape of an eager bite. Oh, savory tubular fruit blooming in the hollow of a hot pot of golden vegetable oil. Where does your labor end? Great unifier of tribes, your taste has been known to tantalize the tongues of our parents. Fill their Limba, Fula, Creole, Timni, Mende, Susu, and Madinga mouths with enough shredded cabbage and fried pork to convince them that there was more to do at birthday parties and funerals than bicker about political corruption. You always came to the party on a silver tray, you and your friends, crisp and browned, each of you resting atop the other in cheerleader pyramid formation. Oh, Sierra Leonean egg roll, no one dared wasting you. Never left you bitten next to a spoonful of jollof rice, drowning in the red paisley oil of its tomato stew. You were always claimed, unlike the nameless half-full Guinness bottles abandoned on banquet tables by those dancing too hard to Dr. Allah to remember which drink was theirs. Would you believe that I almost lost a friend because of you? She told me that you'd been born on Cebu City's shore, that all these years you'd been a catered specialty. I fired back, telling her that you called my name like family, like our dipping sauce came from the same ocean. I argued until I crumbled like the flakes that fell from your sides and sank to the bottom of the deep fryer. You are the friendliest outsider I've ever known. When I squint my eyes, you still look like the color of my fingers. How could you not be mine?
Yaeli Kamara is a first-generation Sierra Leonean poet. She grew up in Oakland, California, and is currently living in Cincinnati, Ohio. You can find out more about Yaeli at eartheats.org. Production support comes from The Clean Bedroom, offering organic mattresses, adjustable beds, and pillows, helping mindful customers create a sustainable and organic clean bedroom step by step. New York City, Boston, and now Indianapolis. More at thecleanbedroom.com. Charles Schwab & Company Incorporated, whose local branch is now located at 1155 College Mall Road. Independent branch leader Jeremy Zeichner, CFP, and team offer personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at schwab.com/Bloomington. And Need More Coffee Roasters, a woman-owned coffee bar and roastery dedicated to roasting organic, direct trade, and fair trade coffee from small-scale farmers around the world, offering signature drinks, teas, and little eats. Located on Pete Ellis Drive, needmoreroasters.com. Thank you, Earth Eats people, including Aabon Binder, Chad Bouchard, Alex Chambers, Mark Chilla, Taylor Killo, Daniel Orr, everyone at Farm Bloomington Restaurant, the IU Food Institute, and Harvest Public Media. Special thanks this week to Yaeli Kamara and Jamie Dansby. Earth Eats theme music is composed by Aaron Toby and performed by Aaron and Matt Toby. Our executive producer is John Bailey. I'm Kate Young, and I produce the show. We'll be back next week.